205 DGS, little Bob Mould there. Did you get into that stuff at all? Husker Du and the Meat Puppets or any of that stuff a little before your time?
No, I remember the names. How do you pronounce it? Is it Husker Du or Husker? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we used to say it the other way, but like the kid across the street that was my buddy, he had them. He liked them. I didn't remember hearing much of it.
Big into Sugar. This is one of Bob Mould's bands. Really, that was like so my wheelhouse. Law school, early 20s. Yeah, alternative.
It probably would have hit better if I was high school aged or a little bit, or like maybe a little older.
Well, once you get radicalized into metal, it's kind of tough.
And it's exactly what we were just talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, he would have liked them more if they were wearing spooky clown masks.
No, if they would scream a little bit more and play their instruments a little louder and faster.
We're covered in blood.
No, you're right, because by about 1983, 84, I was already down the rabbit hole with Metallica and Megadeth.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about my mom, because I'm still getting sympathy cards from listeners and email, and it's incredibly meaningful, and people asking how I'm doing and sort of living vicariously through me, because we all joined that club at some point. And I think sometimes it helps. It's kind of cathartic to hear someone else talk about their experience so briefly. And people who have lost a parent or someone close to them, a child or something, there's the initial ugly crying, you know, scream ball crying of, oh, my God, my mom's dead. And we've all been through that to some extent, although we all certainly grieve differently. With my dad, I didn't go through that as nearly as much until pretty long after the funeral. Hmm. And then something hit me one day and I just couldn't stop crying. But almost worse than that is the mundane grieving. And Andrew, you going through this with your mom, there's all this focus and there's the event and people are bringing casseroles and people are giving, you know, sympathy and condolences. And then at some point within a couple of weeks, you just start waking up without them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that can be harder, because when you're in the moment, you are surrounded by people and they have their hands on you literally or figuratively. And then you just go back to life. It's just going back to life without a person. You know what I mean?
I do.
So that's just kind of the stage.
Yeah.
I think my family's in. And
makes sense.
Everyone being different with it. But yeah. So thank you for continuing to reach out to me. It's been incredibly sweet. I always share the letters and stuff with Rach. And
yeah.
That's cool.
We have the best listeners.
Oh, I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the only best thing I have about this show, but we do have the best audience.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. Mm-hmm. It's always been like that. Razor's Edge?
Oh, yeah, it's time for Razor's Edge. All right, before I talk about my main topic, I want to let you guys know that I reached a new low. So Saturday night, it was about 4 o'clock, go out for a very early dinner.
Oh, boy.
I have one beer, count it, one. It was a Michelob Golden Light. Delicious. That was enough to take me out. I was asleep by 7 p.m. and I woke up at 9:30.
You're 33, not 63.
I know. It was horrible. I woke up. It's 9:30. The movie I'm watching is over. And I am just confused. I'm like, I just got to go get in bed, because I was laying on the couch at this point. And then I slept through the entire night, because you do stuff like that. And you're like, oh, then I'll be up at 2 o'clock in the morning or something. No, I just slept from 7 to 7. And it was
I'm going to have me a Golden Light tonight.
I mean, it did the trick, but I was so embarrassed. I'm like, the next day I'm just like, why did you go to sleep at 7? What's wrong with you? What's going on with you? But I do get more sleepy in the summertime. I think the heat kind of lulls me to sleep, if that makes any sense at all. Mm. Like, it just zaps me on my energy. But that's not even an excuse this weekend, because it was a beautiful weekend. Mm. It wasn't hot at all.
I got one for you. So when I was doing the bartending thing, Megan went with me. And so she spent the whole time just kind of sitting at the bar. She, you know, helped solicit for tips or whatever. And mostly she just drank a bunch of cocktails, because she had nothing else to do for an hour. And so she's sitting there. And so she made friends with this other guy at the bar, kind of an older guy. He'd just gotten dumped by his girlfriend. So he was going out for the night, you know, and he was enjoying watching the music at the bar. He said he goes to this bar all the time. And so they strike up a conversation. They're, you know, they're becoming friends or whatever. And then towards the end of my shift doing that, He buys a drink for himself. Like, they were sampling seltzers, and he liked it, so he bought one for himself. He bought one for Megan, and he bought one for me. And I was like, "Oh no, 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 thanks. I'm not really." And Megan goes, "Oh yeah, get this. He doesn't even drink." to me, and I was like, "What is that supposed to mean?
Why are you making
fun?"
Yeah,
you. I was like, "Why are you making fun of me?"
It's like the movie Barfly.
Yeah. Like, get a load of this guy. He won't even drink that seltzer, I bet. I was like, well, I wasn't gonna know.
Do you just not drink seltzers, or you just don't drink at all anymore?
I mean, I'll drink, but like, not really.
I'm not gonna have a drink and then immediately get in the car, even if it's not enough to raise the. You know, it's like, oh, it's, yeah, you're definitely smart. Nowhere near 0.08.
We
it's like,
we were, like
I want like an hour of not having any alcohol.
Oh,
before
the other
I
night when
drive.
We went to the ball game. I had a hot dog and a Mick Ultra, and that was it. And 3 hours later, I'm driving home, and I'm already having the conversation with the cop.
Yeah.
And in my head, it sounds so fake.
Yeah.
Like, no, sir, I just came from the ball game where I had one Mick Ultra 3 hours ago, which is what every drunk says when they get pulled
yeah.
over.
Oh, I think I had one or two, maybe.
I may have had one. I don't really recall.
Suddenly I'm Justin Timberlake. Then I thought I would
ruin the tour.
I would say I would be happy to... You know, blow into your device if you would like.
And
that's terrible. It's one way to get out of a ticket.
I was going
to
say, that'll get it.
But then I wondered, like, how that sounds to a cop.
Yeah.
Like, if you say to a cop, hey, we can just forego the shenanigans. You've got a breathalyzer. I'm willing to do it. Or if that's like a red flag that I've got a hot one here.
Yeah, or if it's just, like, super annoying. Like, when someone you suspect is lying, it's like, I'll take a lie
detector
test.
I'll show you my phone right now.
I'll take a polygraph test right now. And it's like, well, that I've never believed someone less than you, insisting that you would.
I love how deep the fake argument got in Dave's head that you were then offering a breathalyzer test.
Dude, yeah. Just like you. Like what you said about having constant
like,
bites
just
all
play
day.
Out, like, how is this going to go?
Memorize.
And I'm the most defensive person in the world, even though I'm creating the scenario.
Right.
Like, how does this happen?
Memorizing phone numbers in case they take your phone and you have to make one phone call from jail.
That's a problem.
Yeah, that is.
You better know more than
sure
one.
I'm sure they would let you look at your phone.
They like,
so
hey, ask
to,
Siri.
Yeah, get a phone number.
This is kind of dark, but since we're kind of talking about these personal things, almost every morning when I wake up, whether it's 4 a.m. or like today, I slept pretty well and I didn't wake up till like 6 a.m. I start worrying about every single thing in my life, whether I'm in a point in my life where I have been. Where I have things to worry about, my life is in disarray, my life is in shambles, or if things are going relatively well, I will dig until I find something. Am I sick, or do most people do this?
I mean, I do it too. It's really easy when there's nothing to worry about to find something to worry about. You know, I will make up, home-related, work-related, whatever it is, I will make up stresses, and then I'll catch myself kind of doing it, remind myself, like, you know what? It is okay for things to be going well. It's okay to be like, oh, you know what? I might actually have kind of a handle on whatever's going on around.
And then I don't know if you're like this, Andrew, and everyone in the audience who has the morning demons, because I never do when I go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me to worry when I go to bed, there has to be, like, a real thing, and it has to be, like, a tomorrow thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I go to bed, I wake up at midnight, have to pee, no problem. It's when I wake up, when I could get up, that I start really, you know, shuffling through. But then as soon as I get up, go to the bathroom, brush my teeth, make a pot of coffee, suddenly things seem manageable.
Yeah.
You know?
I definitely relate to that. I spent so many years having insomnia, and there is something about, like, being in bed, not being able to sleep, that just kind of locks you into this worry mode.
Yeah.
I think getting up and getting that change of scenery makes all the difference at the end of, I mean, you should just get up as soon as you start worrying, like, just get out of bed and do something.
I've only done it a couple of times in the past couple of years, but it does help. And I don't know why I don't. It's like, it's my house. It's my...
right.
Couch and television. I'm not at a stranger's house. Like, it's, you know what I mean?
I found affirmations can make a big difference too. This is, now we're really getting into the dorky stuff, but I when I'm laying there in bed and I wake up, you know, 10 minutes before the alarm or whatever, you just kind of talk it out in your head. In my imagination, because I'm usually half asleep when this happens, I have like a fairy godmother, right, who comes in and talks. I'm probably being haunted by a ghost or something, but the ghost is helpful. Because, you know, you just kind of talk it out. You just go like, you know, you talk out, how's today going to go? How's it going
to
go?
It helps me to write things down.
Okay. Yeah.
I wouldn't call it a journal because that suggests something beautiful and flowing.
Yeah, poetic.
I'm more of a bullet point, you know, like
it's more
there's
of
this,
you write one
this.
Hastily scrawled word.
Yeah.
Store.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get you.
I think the whole, like, what you asked earlier, like, are you sick or are you normal as far as, like, just going to that place of anxiety? That's very normal for people who have anxiety to just keep going down into that rut. Because your brain creates those ruts.
Yep.
And that's your comfort zone.
Yeah, it's almost your safe zone.
Yeah. So even if there's nothing going wrong, it's like, I don't know how to feel normal or feel not
bad. Yeah, just the
hypervigilance.
Like, if you picture a battleship with the radar going around, mine, you could use as a fan. I mean, it just goes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost when there is something to worry about, then you're like, oh, I'm just going to
snap into action.
I can just hold this in my hand.
Yeah.
It's almost when things are going okay that you start looking behind the bushes. And
I also will find myself like, okay, so I don't know if this is something that you should really say on the radio, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. We got a medical bill for when Megan had her stroke for like $28,000. Mm. And that stuff doesn't faze me in the slightest. Like, what are we going to, what should we do at like 4 o'clock on Thursday on the show? That's the stuff that like really, because I guess it's something I can control. But when I look at a bill for 28 grand from the hospital.
You know you're not going to write a check
that I know I can't pay. It's like, well, all right, whatever. Like, that doesn't even faze me. I didn't think even once about it. It's sitting in the back of the trash car.
Interesting. Quick break, right back. DGS. Going back to the opening segment, I'll tell you one way I've evolved. I used to kind of hate the Rolling Stones.
Really?
Yeah, so
was that
stupid.
Just like a Team Beatles thing?
Yeah.
Was it?
A lot of it was.
Yeah.
I was so used to 3-chord, major chord poppy that the blues were really nothing to me.
Okay.
And so the Rolling Stones were just very, you know, whatever, kind of boring and minor chords. And yeah, I love them.
Was the competition between them like artificially, you know, just kind of made up? Or was there real, actual?
I think both. They were young.
Weren't they separated by a period of time?
Not much.
No?
Like maybe a year or so.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
I always pictured it being more like 5-6 years.
No. The Beatles hit in 64, and I'm pretty sure that the Rolling Stones did Ed Sullivan like in 65.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Razor's Edge, take two.
All right. It's a good thing we're talking about music because that's my topic.
Hey.
So I was born in 1991, graduated from high school in 2009. That is like the perfect... What am I trying to say? That's the perfect stretch of time for emo music.
Oh, yeah.
If we remember emo music.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking about it last night, and I'm thinking about how emo music convinced me that my feelings were deeper than everyone else's, and no one else had ever felt the way that I had felt before, and things have never been this bad, and just nobody gets it. No one understands.
Yeah, nobody gets me. I get it.
And I feel like millennials are still kind of holding on to that in a way,
yes.
And I'm thinking, did emo music ruin my generation? Because it feels like we are all just like... No one's ever gone through it before. It's just us.
Could be. I can tell you that Gen Z has checkmated you because I drove 4 hours with my daughter and it was just one depressing, sad song after another because she was playing her playlist. And I finally said, I'm like, do you have anything where someone's not dying or just, you know, broken up? She's like, I know. She's like, I am low-key addicted to sad songs.
The first time I let my wife listen to most of the music that I would listen to, she started, like, crying. And she was like, how do you live like that?
Well, mine did, too, but for different reasons.
Yeah.
She was scared.
She was like, oh, no.
No, emo music is the best kind of music. It didn't destroy any generation. It's the best music there is.
I disagree. I don't think it's the best music.
Because things have never been as bad for anyone as they are for me right now, and no one gets me.
Yeah. I think you just made your point.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, sometimes I think about like how emotional I'll get about certain things. Like I'm the kind of person where if something's going on in my life, it's very hard for me to just like, oh, I'm just going to shake it off and have a normal day. It's hard. I feel it all day long. And I'm like, is this just cemented into me because of the fact that I spent so much time as an angsty teen being like, oh,
no,
it's horrible and it's never going to get any better. And no one's ever experienced like this before.
Right. Even more than the sad thing, I think it's narcissist is the wrong word. Maybe egocentric, where it's
main character syndrome, maybe, where it's just like I am the protagonist of reality and everything that
solipsism
happens to me. Yeah. Okay. The other thing I wanted to talk about briefly during Razor's Edge is you guys know that I spend a lot of time, not a lot of time, but I like Dr. Pimple Popper. Those kind of videos where you see people popping zits, they don't bother me. In fact, sometimes they give me somewhat of a rush. And this weekend,
don't powder sugar it.
What?
You love it.
I'm telling you, I'm trying to change. There's a theme to the show. Music can change. I want to change. I don't know if I want to be the Dr. Pimple Popper type of person anymore.
Why not?
Because, well, I was scrolling through Twitter this weekend, or X, I should say, and Dr. Pimple Popper posted a video of like a giant blister on the bottom of someone's foot. And that's not the kind that bothers me. It's the kind of thing I could watch and probably enjoy. And I'm going to click on it. And then I just think, like, do you want to be this person? Do you want to see a stranger get their foot lanced on the internet and just sit there and be like, oh, yeah, that was cool, and move on with your day? Or you could just keep scrolling and it could never happen to you and you could just be a little bit better.
Well, you packed a lot into Razor's Edge today.
I made the choice to be a little bit better.
It's a little bit emo.
It is, kind of. Like, no one's ever experienced this before. No one knows how I feel, but I'm going to keep scrolling.
I'm glad I'm not into that.
Yeah, because it's kind of a burden. Because, you know, like, Amy wasn't here today, but whenever I talk about it, she's, like, going to throw up whenever we talk about pimples or anything. It is an immense turnoff for a lot of people, which is fine. I just don't know if I want that to be, like, my thing anymore. I might try to transition and find something else to be obsessed with on the internet.
Look at the personal evolution.
Keep scrolling. That's
it. Yeah, just keep on scrolling.
That's a good theme, a good kind of, what do you call it? Not a theme, but a analogy for life.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep scrolling.
You don't have to be that person. You could just keep scrolling. It's that simple.
That's me. I'm the keep scrolling guy.
So, guys, about
if your day sounds like
we need the report ASAP,
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
234 DGS. Coming up at the top of the hour, we have our buddy Tom Ackerman, Sweet 16 later. Dave Murray at the bottom of the hour. See how much rain we're going to get this week. Stairway to Kevin?
Yeah, I want to do a couple of Olympic-related things, maybe even a few of them, since this is kind of the last day it's going to be relevant. If we go too much further, it's not going to be much interest in it. But a few things. I mean, one, and I know Rach and Andrew, you guys both have ray gun topics on there, too.
Oh, yeah.
There's been I've been a little annoyed by the pushback on this. Like, the CEO of the Australian sports organization's mad that people are making fun of ray gun. I'm like, and my look, unless your position is that nobody should ever be made fun of for anything ever, which, by the way, that's ridiculous. But unless that's your position, then what are you even talking about? Like, if you choose to go, I'm going to go on TV and compete in a thing. If I'm terrible, it's okay if people say I'm terrible. This happens to professional athletes every day. I mean, it happened to me as an amateur athlete. At some point, people told me, you're not good. And they weren't kidding. I wish they were just kidding. I wish they were just making fun of me. But they legitimately said, you are not good enough. Why is that not okay? This is the Olympics. It is supposed to be the peak level of athletic competition in all of these sports. It isn't in basketball, maybe. It's not in soccer. It's not. That would be the World Cup. But it's up there. And in almost all of the regular, just the traditional Olympic sports, this is it. This is the best of the best of the best. If you go make a fool of yourself, why is that not okay to say?
And if anyone's to blame, it's that guy. Mm-hmm. You're the one who sent Ray Gunn to the Olympics.
Well, I mean, yeah. And I don't feel bad for Ray Gunn at all. Ray Gunn is more famous now than she would have been had she just been mediocre.
Do you know much about Ray Gunn?
No, I think she's a professor of dance.
She has multiple PhDs.
Yeah. Which, yeah, again, fine.
Reagan's doing fine.
Yeah, and this is not about saying Reagan's an idiot, but the performances were bad.
They're funny.
Yes.
It's fun to make fun of things that are funny.
Yes. Yes. So, like, if you're a football player and you ever see the butt fumble? You ever seen that video? It's Mark Sanchez of the Jets.
Oh, yes.
He's just taking a snap and he fumbles it off the butt of his guy in front of him, the butt fumble. That's funny. Did people say, don't make fun of Mark Sanchez? That's not nice. It's okay sometimes, and you have to have a sense of humor about yourself. She knows she's not good. She has to know that.
She knows now.
I don't know. I don't think she knows she's not good. I think that's the problem. I think everyone, because this was like the minister from Australia or whatever saying, like, she is the best break dancer we have in Australia. Well, that's why we sent her to the
Olympics.
Maybe
don't put that in the Olympics. So there's that part of it. But like, if you're an elite competitor, an elite performer, if you're a stand-up comic and you go out there and bomb, people are going to make fun of you.
Yeah. That's part of the risk you take.
Look, Corey Feldman goes out there every day, every weekend in these festivals and performs his music. He's terrible. He's terrible. There's no argument that he's good.
And he's famous because he's terrible.
And it's getting noticed because people want to see the terrible. It's okay to say that. It's maybe not, now if you get personal, that's not okay.
Yeah.
If you were to be like, Ray Gunn's a terrible person. Well, then you're bad. Like, but you can still make fun of bad. And joke about bad as long as, I don't know. I feel like the pushback, like we can't make fun of anyone ever, is silliness.
Well, it was a very scolding speech. It was like, I can't believe that people have things to say about Ray Gunn when she has worked so hard. And it's like, look, her name is Ray Gunn. She's 36. She's a dance professor. She did the worst breakdancing performance anyone's ever seen. The memes are incredible. We're all going to laugh at it. Like, I'm sorry, but we have not progressed so far as a society where it's like, just don't mention it. Like, no, we're going to make fun of it. It's funny.
Yeah.
Truly unfair to present yourself as named Ray Gunn and then flop around on the ground like a fish.
Yeah.
And like do that weird hand thing where she was just like moving her hand on the ground for a little bit. Come on. You can't
be
do
like,
that.
Do like, not be mock
like,
me.
Like if
do
I showed
laugh
up
at that.
If I showed up with my dad bod and was going to run the 100 meters and got smoked, every one of those guys beat me by 50 meters. Well, you should make fun of me for that.
Again, it's time and place. If Ray Gunn worked here with us, and said, I can break dance.
Yeah.
And we're like, really? Show us. And she did her routine. I would be incredibly impressed.
Yeah,
yes,
me too. I would
exactly.
be impressed as well.
She was just your friend.
But you're saying you're going to be amongst the best of the world in the world.
And she was making like goofy looks on her faces as she was breakdancing. Just the way they cut the clips.
Yeah.
You can't expect me to not laugh at that. I'm sorry.
And the whole audience is stone-faced staring at her.
Don't be mean to the person, but the thing that the person does can still be terrible and be funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of this is actually terrible. I don't know if you guys seen this. And, Rach, you bring up the topics about how OnlyFans is exploiting young women mostly, but young women and men, but mostly young women. So the Olympics are amazing, right, overall. It is, these are people that, this is what they do. They compete at these things, which is why something like Ray Gunn stands out. Because then you look at some of these other athletes that do nothing but this all day, every day, 6-7 hours a day, 8 hours a day. All they do is train to run 100 meters, to pole vault, to do the gymnastics floor routine, to do all of this stuff. And the Olympics themselves, the overarching thing, are basically run by criminals who are taking advantage of the talents of these people to make money. Right? Everybody's making money, but yet I have to read a story from NBC New York that they found tons of Olympians who have had to turn to OnlyFans to fund their efforts to compete in the Olympics.
Hmm.
Like they don't get the support to cover their travel, their training. They don't have the sponsorships depending on the sport. There just aren't a lot of them. And yet everybody around the Olympics, especially the IOC, but USOC, the TV networks, these things generate billions of dollars. And we have these special athletes that have to get an OnlyFans account to help cover their costs of living and training and traveling to be a part of it.
I didn't know that.
That's not okay.
Is that U.S. as well?
It was a mix. Mm-hmm. It was a mix of athletes. Let me click on it. I can't remember if any of the specific people mentioned were American, but they're British. I forget which were they're Australian. There was an Australian in there. And I believe there was an American in there as well. But like, and now they're not all doing the same level of thing, right? Obviously, but they are, they're saying, hey, my body's my biggest asset. If I have to use that to be able to pay the bills to compete in the thing that I've been working on my entire life, then fine. One guy was a diver or swimmer who said, look, I'm in a Speedo literally every day. That's all I do. If I'm posting that on OnlyFans, what's the difference between me doing that and being at the pool? That was his logic.
Article today that one of the top jobs for Gen Z is OnlyFans.
Mm-hmm. Very popular.
I mean...
And everyone makes so much money, right? Everyone's just raking it in.
What do we find? The average was $180 a month.
Yeah, the average person on OnlyFans makes somewhere between $150 and $200 a month.
Yeah.
That's like, the average. Now,
it's just very depressing.
It's like, and it's like sports, right? In sports, only the 1% actually make it. Only, you know, make it to this Olympic level or to the professional level. It doesn't stop other people from trying, but this has a little bit more...
Yeah, there's no stigma associated right. with sports if you fail.
Right, there's failing in sports
is not... To
put these
two things together, if I went on OnlyFans, I would be the Ray Gun of OnlyFans.
And we would be like, and do we would not make fun of him.
Do not make fun of Dave.
No, I think could be making fun. If I ever do he something dumb like PhDs. That, you guys have my permission to make fun of me.
But he's the one that put it out there.
It's just... you think about just the way that how exploitive the Olympics are, from the bidding processes to all of the things that it takes to get it done, and there's all these billions of dollars going everywhere, and we don't have a system in place that makes the athletes that helps them do this without them having to sell naked pictures of themselves.
Agreed.
I mean, how silly is that?
Agreed. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad we agree on that. Because, I mean, we talk a lot in the U.S. about how college sports has been very exploitive over the years.
Yes.
And it's getting better now because they're allowed to make money off their name, image, and likeness.
Most people realized how bad the NCAA exploited athletes, or do you think that that's a fairly recent thing?
I think
people have awoken to it.
I think people that have spent their time as much attached to the college sports world as I have knew it, but most people were okay with it. Because it didn't harm them.
They got what they wanted.
Right. And it, you know, like people hate the transfer portal. But, you know, my team's going to lose guys. Well, yeah, but your team's going to gain guys too. But nobody wants their fandom to be disrupted. So we want things to stay as they are, which is the most ridiculous thing in the world, right? You're basically telling all these thousands of athletes, no, you shouldn't be able to do what's good for you. You should do what's good for me sitting on my couch watching football on my butt. I was going to say on my fat ass.
Yeah, no.
We all felt
that hit a little. That hit a little too close to my own home.
I've never had a single consonant, and you knew exactly what he was going to say.
Yeah. When you were in Colorado, he almost
F-bombed. Yeah.
He almost said the word.
He got
half the word out.
Nah, it was probably a good third of the word. Yeah, maybe half.
Rich, didn't you get 3/4 of it out once?
Of the F-word. Word.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know what I was saying, the S one.
Oh.
I didn't even realize what I was doing, and I just made a noise.
It happened to be the S word.
It wasn't my fault.
I think it ended with a D instead of a T.
Yeah. I think it just trailed off.
Mine just stopped awkwardly and coldly. Like, I was really about to say that.
251 DGS. Can you say that again quickly? Because it sets up something I want to talk about.
Okay, so interestingly, this is from a tweet. Derek Gould pointed out that the Reds are really amazing at stealing bases. The Cardinals have been terrible at throwing runners out. A lot of that's because Herrera played a lot and he's not good. But what when you look at a catcher's pop time, that is, for people, most people know this, but if you don't, it's from the time the ball hits the catcher's glove until the infielder at second base catches it. So from the pop of each glove, so pop to pop. So the major league average is around 1.97, something like that. But think of it this way. That's 1.97 seconds. So a guy like Wilson Contreras is right now in the bottom third His pop time is 1.98. Pedro Páez is in the top third. He is 1.94. So the difference between being in the top third and the bottom third in pop time in baseball is 0.04 of a second.
Wow.
Wow.
0.04.
So similarly, if you've ever seen Chariots of Fire, you know, Abrams is the Jewish runner who wins the 100 meters. And they went back and they did a study that how much faster are we now? And you think about it, think about the lack of training they had.
Right, right.
Think about the tracks made out of like seashells and dirt and dust and things like that. Their spikes were just, you know, steel as opposed to these incredibly light things mm-hmm. now. The Chevron tracks now are the fastest we've ever had. The nutrition, the sleep, all yeah. of that. Yeah. That in 100 years, they've managed to shave 0.8 seconds off.
Yep.
That is not much.
No, it's not.
I mean, it's a lot. Like, if he were running, he would be in last place by quite a lot.
It's a lot relatively,
relatively,
yes.
But that's impressive. That back 100 years ago, they were within 0.8 of a second of the fastest people now.
Yeah.
That really shocked me.
Yeah. All of those things, when you really get down to the small differences, are just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
They're just mind-boggling. When you look at the difference between super fast in the NFL, for example. Super fast in the NFL would be somebody that's running like a 4.2. That's like elite, elite, elite speed. 4.2 in the 40. And slow is 5.
Right.
yeah. Like, 0.8 of a second. That's the difference between a slow guy and a super and the fastest of the fast.
Yeah. That's about what I used to lose by. Like, for real. Like, when I went to the Florida relays and raced the really fast guys, that's about what I would lose by.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that distance-wise, it feels like a lot. You feel like you've just been shellacked.
Yeah.
But time-wise, yeah. It's not all that.
It's snap of your fingers, basically.
Hmm.
Try to take a stopwatch out and go quick and try to get like a 0.1 of a second.
Right.
I mean, good luck.
Yeah.
You can, but it takes practice.
Do you remember your pop time?
My average?
Mm-hmm.
I know when I got measured, I was usually around a 2, but that's when I was perfect, though. Like, when I wasn't perfect, I was a 2.1. 2.1's too slow. You can't throw anybody out. 2.2, you can't throw anybody out. 2.0, you got a chance. And the major league, the pop times in baseball are getting better. The average used to be 2.00,
mm-hmm.
and that's below average right now.
So how does Contreras get better?
Well, I mean, it's partly... So normally he is better. Like, normally he's in that top third, and he's not this year. So I'm wondering if just the missed time has kind of, you know, jacked up his performance. Because he's off, like, that 0.04 of a mm-hmm. second compared to where he normally would be.
How was Molina?
Molina is always one of the best. Molina was always one of the best on caught stealing. Pop time was usually high end. But his ball placement was the elite of the elite. So when you think about where the throw needs to be,
yeah.
you're trying to put that basically in a shoebox, right? Something, a space the size of a shoebox just on the first base side of second base, right where the tag can be made. You're trying to throw to the tag. So Molina was the best I've ever seen at that.
Can I tell you the weirdest thing? I was driving by the Kansas City Royals field while they were playing, coming back from KU. And you know what my thought was? I swear to God, this is true. Don't tell Ricky. It was, I bet I'm within about a half a mile of Ricky Horton right now. That's what I thought.
Wow, that's very cute.
It is pretty close to the highway.
It's very creepy.
Yeah.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.